Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your weekly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to writer-director Brandon Christensen about his latest project, the Vacation Rental Horror Superhost, which is currently in post-production, as well as his career to date. Over the course of the interview, I chat to Brandon about how an Airbnb experience sparked the initial inspiration behind Superhost, whether he was annoyed about the release of the rental, and what filming was like under COVID safety protocols. Elsewhere in the interview, we talk about his work in visual effects, whether or not directing gets easier over time, and the benefit of working with great actors. All of which, and much, much more, you can hear right now in my interview with Brandon. Hi, Brandon. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on the show. So we've got you on the show to talk about a bunch of things, but we may as well start with your latest film that you've just been filming, Superhost. So can you tell us a little bit about Superhost?
Yeah, sure. So I, you know, my last two films, Stillborn and Z, they were, you know, kind of personal stories. I'm a parent, so I was really drawing on a lot of stuff that, you know, that I've experienced and stuff like that. So it was, you know, it's kind of trying to take a different approach to horror. And so I had been watching just a bunch of different stuff, and I was just sort of seeing, some different films and what they were doing. And I, you know, kind of just spawned some ideas, that led to Superhost. And it was kind of just like staying away from the family thing, staying away from, you know, the supernatural, and just sort of putting some characters into a situation that they misinterpret until it's kind of too late. And it just sort of spawned these characters that, you know, I just had a ton of fun writing. So yeah, it was different. It was a, you know, it was a super small shoot that we did, because it was a quarantine film. Like, we shot it in October. So it was just a whole different kind of experience filming it. It was you know, like, we were doing three tests a week. We our crew was just tiny, because you know, it wasn't just paying day rates, you also had to pay for the testing and stuff, and it just, you know, on a budget of our size, we just didn't have any money. So we ended up shooting it with six people, and as well as our set medic, and just you know, it's just a very lean and mean shoot. And you know, the film is almost done now. I'm just about locking the picture, and the sound and music and everything has started. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience, but I'm super proud of it. I think the movie's really fun.
And so yeah, so you mentioned that your first two features, Stillborn and Z, were centered around families and supernatural stuff like that. So was this a very kind of deliberate kind of, I don't want to be pigeonholed, I'm going to do something else?
I don't know if it was like trying to get away from that as much as possible, or it was just, I just had an idea for this thing that kept just kind of kept eating the back of my brain a little bit. And so I just, you know, I just kind of got really passionate about this main character in this film. And it was just sort of a different thing. I'm totally game to go back to the family stuff. I love that stuff, because it is very, you know, it's very close to me, just with me having three kids and a wife and stuff like that. It's just definitely something I see all the time. So there's a lot to draw on. It was just kind of fun to do something that's totally different and surprising. So I think, you know, it shows off some different sensibilities of my filmmaking, which I'm excited to share.
And so what specifically was the initial inspiration for the story? What, because I understand it's about like a vacation rental, and then mm-hmm. like kind of all goes wrong.
Yeah, it was a kind of a number of things, because I mean, it's tough when you have just that one singular idea that to really kind of make a whole feature film out of it. So it's kind of been a number of things. I was in Toronto for a film festival with Z a couple of years ago, and I was staying in this really nice apartment, and it was an Airbnb, and I went to the bathroom and the toilet didn't flush. And so I'm like, I'm writing the host of the place. I'm just like, hey, your toilet's not flushing. And you know, I'm just dealing with that. And he came and fixed it. And it was just kind of like, that was kind of one genesis of the whole idea, where it was just like, oh, that's, you know, it's such an awkward situation that I'm in someone's house and they're a complete stranger. I'm paying them to live there. They don't know me. I don't know them. And, you know, you have this awkward situation where they need to come and fix your toilet. And you're just sort of like, hey, you know, your place is really nice. Huh? And it's just very awkward. So I was just kind of extrapolating from that experience. And when I saw the movie Creep with Mark Duplass and Creep 2, you know, I loved those films, but I just loved the idea of having a character who is totally a bad guy. You know, he's not a good person. He's a murderer. He's all these terrible things. And, but you love him, you know, you watch him and you're rooting for him to get away. You're rooting for him to do these things because he's just such a captivating character. And so I was, you know, that was another part of it, was just like, you know, if this host that they're staying with isn't entirely honest with who they are, and, you know, how can you still like them even though they're not kind of who they're presenting themselves to be? And so it kind of that was definitely another inspiration for the film. But yeah, it's really fun. It's got a lot of the style of filmmaking changes because it's partial found footage and part narrative, just because it's YouTubers that are staying at a house, and so you're kind of seeing their show as they're building it around this place that they're staying at.
So, and so like the likes of the, like, was there any other kind of main inspirations that you kind of drew from apart from like the Creep films, or is it very much kind of just your own thing? You had that in the kind of rearview mirror, but you know, it was kind of just your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of the two pieces, just like being in a place that people, I think, take for granted. You know, going to an Airbnb anywhere is just kind of, if you step back and look at it from, you know, in a vacuum, it's a pretty weird thing. You know, it's weird to have people you know stay at your house, let alone total strangers. So I always thought it might be interesting to do something like that. And then having the just sort of the host of the place being someone that you can kind of build a story around, I thought was really interesting. So it was just kind of like making, how do you make a bad guy lovable? And Creep was big for that, just because they did such a good job of it.
Yeah, no, I only saw that film for, I've not seen Creep 2 actually, but I only saw Creep for the first time like last year.
Creep 2 is great.
Okay, cool. Because I'm not, like, I suppose like for years I didn't check out because I'm not that big on found footage, but then I checked it out and I was like, oh, this is really good.
Right.
Like, this is really cool. Yeah. Do you think that this could start like a new, like obviously last year there was The Rental and now there's your film. Do you think this could start a new mini subgenre, Airbnb horror?
I don't know. That was something that was definitely like, you know, when I started writing this back in 2019, that was not a thing that existed yet. I mean, it probably did. It just wasn't announced or anything yet. So that was definitely a bummer as we were kind of getting ready to shoot. And then that movie was announced and everything. But, you know, I still haven't seen that one because I didn't want to poison the well at all. I didn't want to be like, oh, man, they did that thing so much better. They did that, you know, and I wanted to kind of make sure my thing was its own thing. So once it's done, and it should be done in like a month, I'll definitely go back and check that out because it looks really cool. But as far as I know, they're totally different. But yeah, it's kind of like the Dante's Peak volcano thing where there's just like a shared mind frame, like, you know, the world, like the internet always kind of just like you read something on Reddit and your first thought is always the top comment. It's just people are just, you know, they have the same collective imagination, I think. So things like this always kind of seem to happen. Like when I did Z, we submitted it to South by Southwest and they rejected it and they said we already have an imaginary friend film, and I was just like, what, there's no way. And then sure enough, they had Daniel Isn't Real, which was another imaginary friend film. So it's just like another similar situation where you have a film that just randomly is, it wasn't terribly similar, but you know.
I mean, that's a very different, like I reviewed that movie for the site. Mm-hmm. That's a, like, that's a very different movie. Like,
totally. It's,
you know, I mean, it's, yeah, that might have, I don't know, like,
it has an imaginary
friend. I just wouldn't have thought that it kind of crossed over enough that it would make a difference. I
for
mean,
sure.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it is what anyway. It is. It's just kind of like one of those things where that just sort of happens, and it doesn't matter. I mean, the marketplace, is huge. You know, there's so many people looking for new stuff. There's so I think that people are just, you know, everyone stays in Airbnbs, probably less now because of the pandemic, but
yeah, of course.
So they're probably just thinking of ways that they can kind of you know, take things that people take for granted every day and just sort of exploit them for horror. So I'm sure there's just a lot of people that are kind of coming to that same conclusion with things like that. Like, I'm sure Uber will have one. You know, Craigslist, there's been some stuff a long time ago, but that was just something that everyone took for granted. And now it's, you know, people kind of find it a lot sketchier than it used to be. So I think it's just a situation that people are kind of just looking inward to see what they do in their life and finding ways to make horror out of it.
Yeah, that is true. Because I mean, like, there's definitely, because you it is one of those things that you definitely hear kind of scare stories about Airbnb, and hear scare stories about things like Uber and stuff as well. I feel like there was something like a film last year that had some sort of Uber.
There probably was. There's so many movies, it's impossible to keep track.
It really is. This, you know, you're trying to cram in from all the different festivals and all the different streaming services and Shudder and Netflix and all that, and you know, like it just all becomes a blur, you know.
Totally. Yeah, it kind of there's I feel like films right now are a lot less important than they used to be. Like it's almost like films have turned into just a bigger YouTube situation where, you know, there's so many films coming out that they just don't matter. Like, they're just kind of content now. Like, they just, you put them up on the service, you can watch them at your leisure. But there, you know, you don't really get, until you get like a film like Mank or The Irishman or something like that, where they're putting a lot of weight behind it, where they kind of, you know, they make it seem like it's a bigger deal than something else. Because it's, I mean, it's impossible to keep up with the amount of films that come out weekly. It's just like, you just can't do it. There's, you know, like 50 movies across the services every week. And it's like, yeah, how do you keep up with that? They're just,
I mean, it is genuinely insane. I mean, and it does seem like there's just so many things come out all the time, right? And it's not like, I think there was a thing before, like when people cared about stars, when it'd be like in, I don't know, like the 90s or whatever, and people would be like, oh, the new Bruce Willis film is out.
Totally.
And now the new Bruce Willis film is out like every second week, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, I think that's also having to do with like the internationalization of filmmaking too. Like, you're no longer just making films for a US audience. You're making films for, you know, you're making films for Japan, you're making films for, you know, Latin America, things like that. So it's just, there's those movies like that with Bruce Willis, where I think these sales agents or these producers, they go, Bruce Willis is worth, you know, X million amount in sales, so let's make a movie for slightly less than that, and then we'll, you know, we'll give most of it to Bruce Willis, and we'll make this film that we know will sell across the world and make our money back. So it's different. I mean, like, yeah, like Bruce Willis was a $20 million superstar, and it's just like, the way that movies make money now, because it seems like in theaters, the only movies you get are the big tent poles like Marvel or a Christopher Nolan film. You don't get those little, I mean, you look at the 90s, you get movies like Blank Check or The Mighty Ducks. And it's like, those are major releases that are coming out. You don't really see that anymore. You'll get the Pixar films, which have all been going to Disney Plus now anyways. But, you know, you've got Pixar and then the big action tent poles, and that's pretty much it. The rest of the people that are making smaller films, they've had to kind of carve a new path, and it looked like they had to go internationally for it. So I think that's kind of why you see Bruce Willis and all these things. It's just, and Nicolas Cage is the same. It's just like, he's worth X amount of dollars, and they're going to be able to make a movie around that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the difference between those two actors is Nicolas Cage, no matter how shitty the movie he's in, seems to care about the work, whereas Bruce Willis, I don't think, the last time I saw him care in a performance is probably Looper, which I think is like seven years ago, I want to say.
Something like that. Yeah, that's probably, yeah, you're probably right. That is probably the last time he really kind of went for it. And it's a bummer because he's great. And yeah, you know, you kind of hear some horror stories about him, and that's always a bummer because he was such an icon in the 90s and everything. Just, you know, he was just so good. You see him in The Sixth Sense and stuff like that. And, or not, no, yeah, and he was just so good, even in the dramatic stuff. So it's it's kind of a bummer.
He was in so much great stuff in the 90s, you know, like the action stuff, but also like the like
the dramatic stuff and, you know, Sixth Sense and 12 Monkeys and even like weird stuff like Death Becomes Her and stuff. But yeah, anyway, this is not an interview about Bruce Willis. This is an interview about you, man. So like, we'll get back to your movie. So like, was it more difficult to write this one at all? I noticed like for your previous two movies, all the features were co-written with Colin Meaneyhan. And like you wrote this one solo, was that a more difficult process? Was it an easier process? How was that?
It was different. I mean, with Stillborn and Colin and I kind of created it together, and we kind of built the whole story out together, and then we wrote it together. And then on Z, my wife and I had written the first draft of it, and then Colin came in to help kind of really push it towards a better place. And so we, you know, he came in after the first draft and we kind of rebuilt the whole thing. So that was, you know, that was the first time that I'd really kind of gone out on my own to try something. And so I felt a lot more confident going into it this time. Like, I've definitely learned a lot from writing the first two films and sort of just understanding, you know, story and things like that. So this was it was definitely challenging. I mean, writing is always very hard, but I had a pretty clear idea of how I wanted to fit, you know, to do this film. It was just sort of like adding in the layers, like social media and YouTube and stuff. They're a big part of Superhost because of the people that are staying at this place are travel vloggers, and so they're, you know, it's a very particular type of person, and they're trying to build content, and they're just totally unaware at what they're doing and how it's affecting the person that owns this house. So it was just kind of, you know, it was an experience that you kind of write for a bit, you jump away for a bit, and you're just like trying to find things, like, you know, the Toronto story that I was talking about with the toilet, that was just a piece that I could immediately draw from. And I knew I could build a couple of sequences just around a toilet, and, you know, and they make the film and they kind of add to the layers of the film. And, it's kind of just, you're always just kind of looking for those little inspirations, and then they make their way into the script. But, I mean, it's a very simple script. It was, you know, it's pretty short. It's very lean and mean. It's just like, you know, it's a very fast moving script. So I don't know. I mean, it was fun to definitely write. There was definitely a big sense of accomplishment doing something, you know, completely solo. But, you know, it's just, you're still talking to friends and bouncing ideas off of them and stuff like that. So it's never truly just a solo venture.
I was going to ask, was it all just kind of created scenarios, or like, had you asked like friends and stuff, like if they'd had any kind of Airbnb horror stories or any kind of like weird interactions in that environment?
I mean, I definitely was Googling kind of horror stories from Airbnb, and there's a ton, but none of them really ever sort of stuck out. So it's kind of making my own, but you know, it's just, you just talk to friends about the story in general. You'd let them read kind of rough drafts or rough scenes or something like that. And you just sort of pitch ideas and whatnot and sort of, and just try and work your way through it. But it's, you know, it's a very just kind of malleable process. It's, you know, it's always changing. And then you'll make one change near the beginning and it causes ripples throughout the whole thing. And so you're just like, the hardest part for me in writing is getting through the first draft. Cause I'll write 25 pages and I'll be happy with it. And then I'll be like, I'm going to go back and kind of fix this thing. And then you kind of spend all your time rewriting the first 25 pages that you never move forward. And so the hardest thing for me anyways, is just pushing past that 25 mark and finding your way to the end. Cause I mean, 99% of the time, the first draft is always pretty bad. So it's, but it has to be done. So it's like, just try and push through. So I'm hopeful on my next, you know, the next script that I do solo, I'm able to just sort of push through that first draft so I can start making it better. Because that's, I mean, even in the editorial process, when you're editing the film, it's the same thing. Like the first cut of the film is never close to as good as it's going to be.
And so you said you started writing the script in 2019. How long was that process, and how long was it in terms of like getting into production after the you know, the final draft was done?
Well, it was probably middle of 2019 I started working on it, and I was just kind of doing that 25 page thing where I'd write it, rewrite it. And I had sort of you know, it was, when you think about an Airbnb horror film, there's definitely a million ways you can take it, but it's really kind of finding the one, what's the main storyline there, because a scary Airbnb isn't a story. You know, you've got to have characters that are inhabiting this space, and what are they doing, what are their wants, what are their desires. And that was always kind of the hardest thing. And I had the first draft done early 2020, I would say. And we had planned to shoot it in May. Like, we found the location. We were talking to actors and we were ready. You know, we were like, the script wasn't fully done, but it was, you know, we were pushing forward to shoot it in May, I believe. And then, you know, the pandemic thing happens and everything shuts down. So we had to hit pause, and it allowed me to kind of take a breather from the script and sort of step away and kind of see it with fresh eyes again. And I would say it was probably in June 2020 that I had a final, like, not a final draft, but just a, you know, a polished enough draft that I was able to send it out to actors. And, you know, and the draft would change constantly. Like, every day on set, we'd be rewriting scenes, and there was actually scenes that we would shoot, and then we would kind of go, oh, you know what, like, this scene should be a little bit different now because of this or that. And we would actually reshoot them. We reshot like three or four scenes just throughout the process, just because we didn't think that certain things would land properly. So it's kind of like, it's always an ever evolving thing. You know, when you're writing, anything can happen. But once you get on set, you know, every you start seeing your limitations, like, oh, I can't do that because we don't have the money to do this. And so what does that mean for that, this? And then you're kind of just like, you know, making everything tailor made for what you've got available. So the final draft of the script was probably the last day on set. We were making our final tweaks. And that was in October. So it's always just like such an evolutionary process that you're kind of constantly tweaking.
And how did you get the kind of cast? How did you assemble that their cast, and what made you kind of land on those actors? It's I understand that you're working with Sarah Cannon again, who was in Z. Barbara mm-hmm. Crampton's in it. Oscar Chow, mm-hmm. Gracie Gilliam. How did those actors come on board?
I had been talking to Sarah about it from probably early 2020. Like, I told her I had this script. We've kept in touch since C, and I kind of wrote this part around her, just sort of thinking that she could play this lead character. And then you know, I sent her the script later, and she had some thoughts and she liked it a lot, and she was attached very early on. And then Osric was the roommate of a friend of mine out in LA, and I was just, you know, I've seen his stuff before. He was in my friend's feature film, Empty by Design. And I've always just kind of liked him. He's just like a very friendly looking guy that you can, you know, he's very social media savvy. And he, you know, he's a very lovable person. And I knew I needed that for the film. And so he was really the only person that I ever talked to about the role or anything. Same with Sarah, because it was just like, you know, I wanted this one thing. And we're such a low budget that we can't really go out to like, you know, doing all these casting things like that. We couldn't afford a casting director. So it was really kind of talking to friends and friends of friends. And that's how we got everybody. With Barbara Crampton, she and I had talked a little bit because she had some scripts a while ago that she was, you know, checking to see if I'd be interested in reading and possibly directing. And none of them were quite right for me, but we'd kept in touch. And so, and I had this script, I was just like, hey, do you want to read this? And she was just like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do this. And so she pretty much just jumped on board right away when I sent it to her, which was really awesome, because, you know, you want to have people that people know. Like, you want to have these faces that go, oh, I recognize him, I recognize her. And so it's, when you have no money, you can't just pay for star power. You have to use your relationships and past things like that. And with Gracie, she was a friend of a friend of a friend, who I was talking to a friend of mine, Josh Ethier, who's a producer and editor. He does like all of Joe Bigas' stuff, like VFW. I asked him if he had anybody that he could recommend, and he had Sierra McCormick, who was one of the leads in VFW. And we had been talking for a little bit, and unfortunately her schedule didn't work, but she's like, oh, you should totally, you know, reach out to my friend Grace. She's amazing. She's awesome. So I started that conversation. And so, you know, we got Grace in as well. And she was such a great find. I mean, we got super lucky with her. You know, you'll have to see it when you see the movie, but she crushes it. It's awesome.
And so how long was the shoot? And obviously you were saying, you know, it's filmed during the pandemic. It's still going on, ever on. How was that? How did you manage that with all the testing, the social distancing? Like, that must have affected your budget.
Yeah, so it was definitely one of those things that we almost pushed the shoot into 2021. because we were waiting for things to get lighter, I guess, with the restrictions and stuff. But what we basically had no idea how to do it. And since we were dealing with SAG, they had a ton of rules that we had to adhere to. And so that was the hardest part for us, was just sort of getting through that process. Cause there's, you know, you have to have safety plans. You have to have doctors sort of look at everything. You have to, there's a ton of rules and hoops you have to jump through to make sure that, you know, to just prove to them that you're going to be taking this very seriously and very safely. Fortunately, we were such a small shoot that, you know, there was probably 10% of our budget had to go towards testing and other COVID related things, which was tough because it's such a low budget that we had to cut a ton of positions. Like we didn't have like a first AD. We didn't have any PAs. We didn't have anybody that didn't need to be there 100%, wardrobe, anything like that. We just couldn't afford testing. So we just had to limit to the very bare minimum. So we had a director of photography. We had an assistant camera. We had a makeup. We had a gaffer, a key grip, and then we had a sound guy, and that was it. And, you know, if you look at the credit list on my other films, the crew sizes were 2 to 3 times bigger than that. So it was tough. Just everybody was wearing multiple hats, you know, like everybody's doing different things just because we couldn't afford otherwise. But the length of the shoot was 18 days. We did 3 weeks of 6 days each, which was new for me. My other films were always 20 days and we would do 5 day weeks. So that 6 day you definitely feel. It felt like it flew by. I mean, it was such a small group of people that you were just sort of spending those 3 weeks with. It's just, you know, you get to know everybody very intimately and it becomes just one of those things. I mean, every time you shoot a film, you're sort of bonded, forming these relationships that are kind of, you know, going to last forever. And it was nice because I've worked with all these people in Las Vegas on commercial work and stuff like that, but I've always done my features in Canada. So this was the first time I was able to shoot here with the people that I've worked with a ton. And it was nice to be able to kind of, you know, work with them on a setting like this, where you're making movies and you're not just doing some, you know, some commercial thing that it's just a different kind of creative process. But I mean, we had just enough people to make it all work.
And so it sounds like I know it's obviously a big part of it, but kind of parking the, you know, like restriction stuff to one side, the testing, the social distancing, mm-hmm. all that, was it, it sounds like it was a relatively smooth shoot. It doesn't sound like it, or am I picking that up wrong?
No, I think it was very smooth. I mean, we had great actors, which helped a lot. There was no egos or anything on set. You know, that's always kind of the first fear, is when you're working with someone that you don't know very well. I knew Sarah and I knew Ozark through a friend. I've heard great things about them, but you know, with Grace and Barb, you just never know. And when they show up and they're just like so welcoming and they're so eager to kind of participate and eager to work with you and everything, it just makes, you know, life on set so much easier for everybody, because we're all kind of, it was a very, you know, the most people we ever had on set, I think, was 13. And that was when we had extra actors and we had, you know, extra crew people to help with like special effects or something like that. But we got really lucky. Everybody just sort of gelled really well. And there was no blow ups. You know, maybe I had a couple, but that's pretty standard for me. It was probably the smoothest shoot I've done so far, I think. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if the turmoil kind of helps films or if it's bad for films, but this one was, it was nice to kind of just sort of breeze through it all. And you know, now that the movie's pretty much cut, I'm really happy with it.
I don't know. I think like it can go either way. I mean, sometimes right. You can you hear about a kind of horror story, troubled production. You can kind of see that on
like
screen.
Like Jaws.
Yeah. So, obviously sometimes it can make things that are great. And obviously sometimes it can make things that are a mess. And then like the opposite is kind of true as well, because like sometimes it does make you suspicious when like an actor is being interviewed and they're all like, yeah, we just all had such a fun laugh, you know, like it was you know, laugh a minute, and you know, it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, all the fun happened on set, but not necessarily on screen.
Right. Yeah, for sure. No, I think this was a case where it's not that it's always fun. It was just everyone took it seriously and everyone was very collaborative and stuff like that. Because, I mean, there's, you know, it's kind of a situation where everybody was able to throw in ideas and make things work better, you know? So if someone threw an idea out, it wasn't just like, you know, you can have the egos weren't on set where it's like, hey, can you try it like this? No, I would only do it like this. Or can you know, everyone was very welcoming to new ideas and trying new things. And since you are such a small production, you have sort of that ability to try out different things.
So you say you weren't particularly precious about like your screenplay and people, everybody saying every, you know, full stop and comma, and you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, you know, I'm only one point of view, and so Osric and I, we had a lot of conversations early on about certain things, and a lot of stuff changed around sort of some ideas that he had. There was there's a big scene, probably the biggest scene in the film, and we were shooting it in the third week of the shoot, and Grace, like we were, you know, it's like a 7-page scene, which is it was the most complicated single scene I've ever done. And we didn't have a ton of time for it because, you know, we had to process all the actors through makeup and their special effects and blah, blah, blah. So we had like 6 hours to do these 7 scenes. And right before, you know, right when we get to set, Grace just kind of goes like, hey, you know, I've been thinking about this scene and this monologue I have in it. You know, I feel like I'm giving away too much, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of like step back and I'm like, oh man, you're totally right. And so we sat there, we're at a picnic bench out in this like forest thing. And I'm just like writing with a pencil, a new monologue for her. And that's what's in the film now. Like we never even shot the other one because her point was just so obvious in hindsight. But at the time it was just like, you know, there's so many pieces to a script that it's sometimes impossible to be able to sort of track them all, you know, by yourself. So, you know, you have those other point of views come on set, and they just sort of fill out a lot of the things that you're missing. Z was huge with that too, with like Keegan Connor Tracy. She came and she brought so much to the character and the role and did things that we didn't even know, you know, were part of the idea. It's just like she brings them out because of her experience. So that's the benefit of having great actors, is that they bring a point of view to your material that you don't even know exists.
I was wondering as well, like, now this is your third feature, do you believe that, does the directorial process get easier? Do you feel that, or do you feel that just each film comes with its own separate challenges, so it's all kind of much or muchness?
Right. I think every film comes with its own set of challenges, but the big thing is that you get confidence in yourself. You know, it's the biggest thing is being able to exude confidence in an idea, because if you're on set and you don't know what you're doing and you don't have confidence in what you're doing, everyone's going to smell that. They're going to be like, you know, actors are going to look at you different. The crew is not going to, you know, they don't trust you or things like that. So, you know, the biggest thing is that on movie 3, I just feel very confident in my ability to get, you know, get points across that I need to do. And just since I do have a little bit of a track record, I know that the crew will trust me as well to be making decisions that make sense, and they're not second guessing everything. Because if you've got that, like, and that happens with a lot, you know, I'm sure it happened a bunch on Stillborn and even Z, it's just like, you want to have a leader at the front of it that they can take, you know, they can get feedback from people. That's totally fine. But at the end of the day, you just have to be able to make decisions and make them quickly so that you can kind of get through everything. Cause if you're just kind of constantly, you know, well, maybe, and you know, maybe we should try. And if this was like this, you need someone to be like, you know, that your job as a director is to just push through those things and have ideas that you can try. I mean, it's totally fine to experiment. And a lot of great things comes from that, but still you need to be able to, you know, you've got a finite budget, you've got finite time, you need to be able to get those days, and you need to be able to just have confidence so everybody knows that they're there to follow your lead.
And so, yeah, with where is the kind of production at now, and when are we likely to see the film? When is it likely to surface?
I am very close. I'm like maybe 2 weeks away from locking picture on it. I've sent off the first three reels of the film, which is about 40 minutes. I've sent it to my sound designer and the Blitz Berlin, who's doing the score, and they did the score on Stillborn too. But I've just been kind of locking the film as I go. I've got to deliver another reel in the next few days, but it's got to be done middle of May, so we've got about a month and a little bit left. It's getting close though, and I've done like half the VFX needed for it so far because I do all that as well. And it'll be out. I can't really say we do have distribution for it, but I can't say where, but it will be out in the early fall.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to checking it out then. I'm interested as well by the fact that Blitz Berlin are doing the music.
They just did Psycho Gorman too.
Yeah. A great soundtrack for Psycho Gorman. So that popped out at me when I saw that on IMDb. I was like, so is it like a kind of, I mean, I take it would be very different from that, obviously, but is it kind of retro in any way, or is it a kind of modern score?
I wouldn't say it's, I mean, Psycho Gorman shows how talented they are at just making something totally different, because it feels like a score from like an old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie or something. Whereas, you know, with Stillborn, they did full orchestral and it was all strings and things like that. And then we're doing something a little different on this. It, you know, it just kind of shows how their ability to create moods is not really dictated by instrument. It's just dictated by sort of their intuition on how to kind of capture a moment and a mood. So this one's going to be more kind of synthesized and whatnot, but not in like a retro throwback kind of way, more in like a Trent Reznor kind of way.
All right. Okay. I got you. Fair enough. I also know this as well. I take it like, I know it's a very small crew. It's kind of shorter production time and stuff like that. I know that you have a background visual effects as well. It doesn't look like you've done visual effects on this. Is that just because there's not visual effects on it, or is it because somebody else did it?
No, I just the IMDb is just very outdated right now. Let me look at my list. There's 103 visual effects shots and I've got 65 left. So I've just been kind of, as I edit, I'll do some of the easier ones. There's some bigger ones that I have to do still that'll probably be done very, very last. But that's usually like the last thing I do right before we do the color correction. So it'll be reflected eventually.
Okay. I did wonder because I did realize that the IMDb was out of date, because I found a few other articles on the movie, and that's because, I mean, according to IMDb, it's just Oswald Chow that stars in the movie. It's just nobody else. So
I know we've added people like three separate times now. We keep, submitting the actors, and they never change it. So I've kind of just given up on it for now. Hopefully it'll happen soon.
Yeah,
but
it's
weird. I don't know why that. It's, you know, IMDb is kind of a fickle sight sometimes.
It's very, very odd. But yeah. Anyway, going forward, do you think that you'll continue to do visual effects on other people's projects, or are you kind of more focusing on your own directorial career? Is that the path you're going on?
I mean, I really enjoy doing visual effects. Unfortunately, the movie side of things isn't paying for all my bills yet. So it's kind of just like, I do a lot of commercial work, but that has kind of gotten less and less over the years as I've kind of taken into visual effects more and more. So it's just a tool set that I have that I can bring to my own work, but also kind of offer to others to help. I've got a family, I've got mouths to feed and stuff like that. So I do really enjoy it though. Just sort of having the ability to do it has been pretty fun. I've met a lot of cool people doing that as well. So, I don't know. I mean, I would love to just be a director full time, but, you've got to kind of diversify a little bit these days to try and make yourself as valuable as possible. So I mean, I have no other movies coming up that I'm going to be doing. So it's kind of just like when things happen, I'll gladly do it. Cause it's, I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah. And I must say, like, I'm being perfectly honest when I say this, not just to butter you up, I'm very impressed with the visual effects you've done. Like, I've seen like Bliss and VFW and Spiral, and I was watching Z yesterday. And yeah, you've done some great work.
Cool, thanks, man. Yeah, it's definitely an ever-evolving thing. It's you kind of learn things and try and apply to them to the next one. So I've still got some things in Superhost that I'm not sure how I'm going to do. So I've got to kind of learn that now, and then I'll be able to use that later as well.
And kind of coming back to your second feature, Z. Were you happy with the reception? It got a pretty positive reception on Shudder, and pretty solid reviews. And is that something you pay attention to much?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to pay attention to reviews, especially when you know, I know a lot of directors these days, they have other editors and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, Z, I directed it, I was a writer on it, I edited it, I did all the VFX on it. So it was just like a very intimate process that I was involved with it in, where I was just there from beginning to the very, very bitter end. So, yeah, I mean, I think when that is the case, you definitely have a little bit more of an emotional tie to it, just because of, you know, anything that's critiqued is on you. So it's like, if it's a bad edit, you know, that's on you. If it's a bad visual effect, I can't be like, oh, well, they did this, it's on me. And so it's just like, I don't know if it's how it is for other people that edit and stuff like that, but it just definitely feels more personal. But yeah, I mean, the film came out and it did really well here. Shudder said back at the time when it came out, it was the fourth biggest release they had at the time. So that was really cool, because they don't typically release their numbers. They'll just say, oh, it's performing well, or it's not performing well, or whatever. But for them to actually put a number on it, that was pretty cool. So I'm hopeful that this one, you know, can have a similar kind of release and does really well. Cause I think this film is, it's a lot lighter in tone than Z and Stillborn, where it's a little more an easier watch for people, even though it is still very horrific and it does go to very dark places. It's just the characters in it are a lot more light at the beginning. So they're, it's just different than just like a depressed mom. You know, depressed mom just kind of brings all the energy down, where it's just a very quiet and somber thing. This one definitely has a lot more energy.
And do you think this one will, I mean, you might not be able to give too much away, but like, do you think this one will also end up in Shudder, like, because your previous two features had landed there?
I think it's a safe bet.
I was also like watching Z yesterday. I was also wondering, in terms of like, you know, some of the actors you've worked with, Stephen McHattie's in that film. And I was kind of wondering, what was it like to work with him? Because he seems like a intense and interesting character.
He is very intense. I don't want to speak too much about that experience, but I'll just say that him being there and him leaving definitely brought the crew together.
Right. Okay. fair enough.
I will say this though, Michael Ironside on Stillborn and Barbara Crampton, because they're all kind of like those character actors that come in for a day or two and they just, you know, come and perform. They were, you know, wonderful, very lovely people. I love them.
That really intrigues me, because like, as well, because I remember previously, when I interviewed Mike Peterson about his film Knuckleball, I asked him about Michael Ironside, because like, I mean, you know, I've seen lots of Michael Ironside films. You know, he's a very in intense and terrifying man. And no, apparently not. Apparently, in real life, just a lovely man.
Super, yeah, giant teddy bear. He was.
Yeah,
he
that's was what awesome. Mike said as well. He used those words too. Like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, we only had him for one day on Stillborn, but he was just incredibly lovely and just, you know, couldn't have been more generous with sort of, you know, it was my first film and everybody was on their best behavior. And you know, when he came on set, there was definitely that apprehension from everybody, just because it was a very young crew. And it's just like, holy crap, we've got Michael Ironside. But it was immediate that he was just like, he didn't, you know, there was no kind of precedence or anything that I can't think of the word I'm trying to say, but there was no kind of pretense that he's above us or anything. Yeah. Or any, you know, he came, he had suggestions and stuff. We used a lot of them. We used, you know, we didn't use all of them, but he was just very into it and very complimentary. And, you know, and he reached out after the film and we emailed back and forth for a little bit. And so it was just very impressive how down to earth this giant, you know, larger than life movie star was.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Was it like by the time, you know, this movie though, like working with Barbara, like mm-hmm. are you kind of over that now? Are you kind of like in terms of like being intimidated of or thinking like, oh, this person's a name or you know, that kind of thing?
I mean, it's always kind of scary just because you don't know what you're going to get, you know, especially after the last experience. It's just like, right, yeah. I don't want to handle someone like that. And so it was, you know, you're just like trying to be overconfident, I guess, a little bit just to try and like puff your chest out and be like, you know, I know what I'm talking about or whatever. But you realize very quickly when someone's chill, like they're, you know, it comes across very, very quickly. So I don't know, I we'll see what happens on the next one, but it's always definitely just sort of like, you know, you just want to make sure that these people who have done it a million times, they're not going like, oh man, this guy's the worst I've ever worked with, you know, this guy's doing this wrong. And that you don't want them, that's where that whole confidence thing comes in. It's just like you want to exude the fact that you're a professional and you know what you're doing. I think at the end of the day, everyone just wants to be professional and enjoy what they're doing. Cause I mean, we're making movies. We're not, you know, we're not saving lives. It's a very, you know, it's a fun, fortunate position to be in.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. Yeah. But it's still a good thing, you know, still especially in these times, people need goddamn entertainment. So like, it might not be an essential service necessarily, but it's still important in a way.
Right. Definitely.
So you're still in the midst of Superhost. So like, have you got anything else in mind that you're already eyeing for the future? Or are you just very much laser focused on this project?
No, I've definitely got some things. My brother and I have been writing together now, and that's been nice just because he's a great writer and he's able to focus on that side of things. And so we've actually got a few different projects that we're working on. And it's sort of like which one's going to hit first, because we've got a couple of them out to different places. And, you know, if one pulls the trigger, that's where I'm going to go immediately. But I do have another smaller kind of Superhost type size of film that I have ready to go as well. So I think by the end of the year, I'll have another film in the can. I'm trying to do another one. I want to have one more done this year for sure. It's just a matter of which one. So yeah, definitely. There's three different projects that are just, you know, they're all totally different, but you know, I think that two of them especially are very close to just getting that green light.
And can you tell us anything about any of those three projects, or do you just want to keep that under your hat and we can maybe have you back on the show another time and we can talk about them then?
Yeah, I mean, it's two of them are kind of, they're, you know, they're with other people right now, so it's, I don't want to talk really about them. But my brother has a couple books that he wrote that we adapted, and we've got a sort of like a 9-episode series of it that we've written, and we've got the Bible and stuff like that. We've got some calls about it soon, but it's that would be really exciting. It's something kind of personal again with our, you know, it's kind of about our childhoods and has some horror sci-fi stuff that's really fun. But I don't know, it's exciting, it's fun. I feel like things are kind of moving in a positive direction where, you know, I don't really need to be just laser focused on one movie at a time. I can kind of be helping in different ways and getting different projects going. So that's been really nice.
Well, I think that's a good point to kind of wrap up on. It just leaves me to say thank you very much for coming on the show. And I look forward to checking out Superhost whenever it comes out in the fall.
Yeah, for sure. I'll send you an early trailer after we get off this call so you can see what's going on.
Excellent.
That was my guest, Brandon, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. As always, I'd also like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. Remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you can make sure those reviews are 5 stars, as apparently anything less means the show is awful, because that is the weird world we live in. Anyway, that is all for this time, but be sure to join me next time when I will be talking to another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!